As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Happy it's not Monday. Thursday?
So the No Dunks podcast on the Athletic Network. It's Thursday, June 3rd. I'm J.E. Skeets rolling with the homie, Tass Mellis.
Hey, everybody.
Hey, Tass. Got my top shot hot boy here. Fellow freak, Trey Kirby.
Ayo.
Ayo.
Oh, the international man of mystery taking it to the max, Lee Ellis.
Friends.
And last but not least, making the magic happen, JD.
Hello.
There he is. And here we are. Shout out to the stream team joining us live right now on YouTube. Smash that like button. Leave your comments. Subscribe. Keep sending in your questions and comments for the next Beach Steppin' podcast. Email them in. NoDunks@TheAthletic.com. You can follow us on Twitter and tweet them at us. @NoDunksInc. We actually hit the beach yesterday. If you haven't listened or watched that show yet, go ahead. Take a second later today. Have a larf with us. We actually discussed ideal landing spots for Spurs free agent DeMar DeRozan. We discussed which sitcom characters would make great head coaches. And we popped some Ziploc bags of cards and watched footage of Lee playing basketball in sunglasses. So we had a blast.
Wild one.
Yeah. Trey's got him ready.
Sorry, JD. I gave you a quick pump fake with the bag here. Like Jonas Valanciunas, Dwayne Wade.
Go check out that Beach Step podcast. What were you going to say there, Lee? I thought you were getting ready to tee up something.
Well, I'm just glad that Trey's got that bag ready just in case things go off the rails and we have to see if there's a Nate McMillan in that pack there still. Because we got Nate yesterday, didn't we?
We did. I feel like a little bit like you, Lee. I just have like random things around here. For me, rather than pencils, it would be a collection of three different black pens. Obviously, I've got my bag of cards around here. And I'm sure if I look around, there's some CD-ROMs with various places. I've visited as well.
Good.
Well, I don't think we're going to need to get to that stuff here on this show because we got a lot of games to recap, and that's what we're going to do here. Look at all four of last night's games in the playoffs. Maybe say goodbye to a few of the teams that we have lost, have been eliminated. And by the way, on tomorrow's podcast, on the Drop Friday show, we will start previewing and actually predicting a couple of the second round series that are locked and loaded for this weekend. We'll save that for Friday's show because today it's all about looking back to last night. And let's start with a crazy game, Tass. Luka Doncic scoring 42 to lead the Mavericks over the Clippers 105-100 in the end in game five there. Got real dicey for Dallas, but they held on and Luka was pretty special. Despite maybe not having a great fourth quarter, he was goddamn incredible.
The Clippers are going to regret the day they didn't bring the fire from the beginning. And it started from the beginning of this series when they didn't put Kawhi or Paul George on Luka. They waited a couple games to make their lineup changes. They didn't play hard really until game three from the beginning of the game. And it continued into game five where they got back home and they didn't really scramble a lot on the defensive end until that final quarter when they held the Mavs and Luka to a 16-point fourth quarter. And despite not playing incredible defense the entire night, that 16-point fourth quarter was enough to just get them oh so close to a win, and then they fell apart with 15 seconds left. They got a great stop. Mm-hmm. They're down 1 point, and they push, and they didn't hold back. Okay, that happens. Terrence Mann is the guy who's leading the break, and he could have had a layup. He could have attempted a layup, but instead, for whatever reason, he pulled back. He dropped it to Nick Batum, who missed a shot, and Paul George and especially Kawhi Leonard are at the three-point line, jumping around, waiting for the ball. Where is it? Well, that's just a miscommunication of this Clippers team. What are we doing here on the final play? Is it going to Kawhi? If you don't have that initial attempt, come back and push it out to Kawhi. And Ty Lue said, you know, going into to game three after losing the first two, we're going to play better on the road. Our offense will play better on the road. And it's true. They scrambled and played harder on the road, and they came back home, and they didn't do it for four quarters, and Luka was way too freaking much. And they could have got there at the end, but I think it just shows that last play as well that they're not on the same page. They just don't have it completely together, and their talent will get them there to the end. But Luka was, he was enough to get the Mavs this win, and I find it hard to believe that the Clippers are going to be able to fight back and win Game 6 and Game 7.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, the hobo sweep is in play, Trey. It's only the third playoff series in NBA history, first since 95, I think they're telling us, in which the road team has won the first five games. You can throw out the Raptors-Celtics series from last year, because that's in a neutral site there down in the bubble. But, yeah, the hobo sweep, everybody's excited. I mean, we've talked about the douchebag sweep, the gentleman sweep. Now there might be a hobo sweep here if, of course, the Clippers can win in Dallas, and then the Mavericks can once again finish it off in Game 7 in L.A. But what were your takeaways from this game?
Yeah, I thought it's hilarious that the hobo sweep is still on the table, and Ty Lue, he was right. Road court advantage so far has been the deal here. Unfortunately for the Clippers, they earned home court advantage, so I don't know if you want to necessarily be in that situation. But I thought going with Porzingis and Boban as the front court was pretty interesting there. From Rick Carlisle to start off this game, kind of got the Clippers to fall in love with the jump shot, which they are want to do, turned into a shooting contest. You know, the teams played pretty fairly. They tied from three there. The Clippers had just a few more turnovers, and I think Kendrick Perkins nailed it. I think Kendrick Perkins nailed it, is what I just said on Twitter. He said, Luka jumped on over the fence and found out the dog that was barking wasn't nothing but a damn Pomeranian, went and got his ball. He served the Clippers a church dinner tonight that included a family order of 42 leg quarters, 12 pieces of cornbread, and 8 slices of pound cake. Wild stuff from Kendrick Perkins. But Luka was the difference, man. And you see the difference between what he does when he's running the game out there compared to what Paul George and Kawhi Leonard do, because Luka, the scoring is incredible, obviously. The guy can get his shot anytime he wants, but also feels like he can get a good shot for anybody on his team anytime he wants to. You saw the stats going around after this game where it was like Luka scored or assisted on 31 of 34 Mavericks buckets or something
37.
Along.
31 of 37.
31 of 37. There you go. But you see, that's the difference there is the playmaking just elevates all those other players around the Mavericks as well. We got 20 from Tim Hardaway Jr. He was getting some tasty dishes, even if he didn't shoot a great percentage. The playmaking that Luka brings, the ability to get in the lane and either score with like a weird floater or a spinning turnaround jumper or maybe a bank shot, or then on the other hand, be one of the best passers in the game, get these wide open threes. That's what gets him to the level of a James Harden or a LeBron James, which is a little bit further, honestly, than Kawhi and Paul George, at least in this series so far.
Yeah, I was loving that Kendrick Perkins tweet until he got to the church dinner part. I thought the dog fence part was awesome, but then he messed up the 12 pieces too. It was actually 14 pieces of cornbread, Lele. I mean, it was pretty amazing.
14 pieces of cornbread.
Yeah, with the 42 points and the 14 assists and then the 8 boards. But this is pretty special stuff we are seeing here from Luka in his first, he's played 11 games in the playoffs and he's averaging, I don't know, 32, 9, and 9 on, I assume, 50, 40, 90 type splits, or at least pretty close to that. It's special. It's the ability to make the other guys on his team better, where it does differ a little different than maybe a Kawhi or Paul George. That's mm-hmm. the truth. That sort of makes him a little bit more special, at least in today's game.
Yeah, and it's the second time in the series they've won a game where he hasn't had to take over in the scoring of the fourth quarter. You know, he did that earlier in the series. But, you know, when you look at the start of this game and Rick Carlisle says, I'm going to throw Boban in the starting lineup. That, to me,
is when a team is down 3-1 and it's like, I'm just going to try anything. And instead, Boban, I think, was decent. Kristaps Porzingis should not be worse than Boban in a playoff game. And I think Boban, actually, in his 20 minutes last night, was better than Porzingis. Now, you can look at the box score and see when Porzingis was on the floor, they were actually better than when Boban. But I just thought Boban went out there, played a role, and it was effective. Anything you get from Boban is basically found money. Porzingis is supposed to be a legit star, and he just wasn't there, I didn't think, last night. And I thought Dwight Powell was good for them in that third quarter, and Tim Hardaway hit some big shots. But when you look at it, I mean, Luka took 37 shots there last night. He's still carrying so much of that load. Like, without him, they seem lost, but he still is able to control the game and just take it away from the Clippers. And that's the real concern here for the Clippers, is they should have their box score. They got great contributions from all their starters. You know, it wasn't like it was just a one-man show out there. So they are losing because it still seems more individualistic that the performances they're getting. But even down to the end there, they were up 10, the Mavs there, with just over a minute or so to go. And that layup from Nicholas Batum, how that didn't go in, how they didn't get a tip to just get that ball to drop is just remarkable to me. But then Clippers get the ball, Tim Hardaway hits the free throws, and then Kawhi obviously throws up the air ball there to end it. So this is a weird series. I thought after game four, when the Mavericks got blown out at home, I thought, surely no, the Clippers now can understand. And again, you've got Boban out there, like, you can go past him if he's coming out to defend, if he's stretching the floor a little bit. But they weren't able to do that. They just don't have that killer instinct in them for some reason. When the series is in a pivotal moment like this, game five, give yourself a chance to close it at home. To close it on the road. And then if you don't do that, you get a chance to close it at home. Now, they're in the last chance saloon. They have to win two games here. And, I mean, I don't know. I think, sure, they're a chance in Dallas. Why not? I mean, they've been great out there. But will they be able to finish the job back in Los Angeles? It's a weird series. But Luka, for me, if that neck injury was the real reason why they struggled in game four, he didn't look like it bothered him last night, then the Mavericks should be able to finish this game in Dallas, because he just was moving much better, shooting much better, and look great out there. But honestly, Porzingis is really starting to get on my nerves out there. 14 points. He's 14 points a game and four rebounds a game is what he's putting up. I mean, for a guy who's supposed to be the Scottie Pippen to Lucas Michael, I mean, he just is invisible for far too long. Beat Dylan Brooks at least. Use your fouls. Foul someone. Make an impact on the game.
He had a big shot.
He did.
In the fourth quarter.
Okay, one shot. Let's give him one shot. But surely that's, you're expecting a lot more from your star player than what you're getting from him last night. Again, he took, Boban went 3-for-6 from the field. Porzingis went 3-for-6 from the field. Boban had 7 rebounds. Porzingis had 6. I mean, it's like, that to me is just not good enough. Like, Luka is really covering over that huge, huge, gap there that Porzingis is not filling in, because he's the guy who's supposed to be like, okay, when Luka sits, then we go to Porzingis and he's just going to keep that scoreboard ticking. But they can't rely on him right now. It's incredibly frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's why you still couldn't convince yourself, even if Luka is playing the best basketball in all of the postseason right now, which you can for surely make an argument for, you wouldn't pick the Mavericks to win a title. To even pull off like a LeBron 07 sort of run to the finals, I don't think you would, because it would help if KP was, maybe not Pippen level, sidekick, but better than he has been. I do agree with that, Lee. I mean, that's where I would struggle to still see them. Like, I mean, they still got to win this series and then to win a couple more to even get to the finals. Like, I don't know. Maybe Luka is LeBron here 07 style. I think Sam Quinn at CBS Sports was like comparing Luka's game last night in a 2-2 series there in a big win on the road over the Clippers to what LeBron did in game five versus the Pistons in 07, sort of as the underdog, and that put them on the path to the finals. Now, that's the iconic LeBron 48. I think that was a double overtime game, but he broke it down. Sam did, like, you know, in that game, LeBron had a combined 64 when you count the points and the assists. Well, Luka, he had combined 64 when you count the points and the assists last night. The teammates, you know, LeBron got 61 from his squad. Luka got 63 last night. The big difference is LeBron scored like 29 of Cleveland's final 30. But like Trey said, Luka did have, his hand in 31 of the 37 total field goals. And it was just sort of a flip of what LeBron did in 07. Like, he did all his at the end, which is awesome and more impressive, don't get me wrong, where Luka had that first quarter task where you know, he just like came out guns a blazing. How many threes did he hit in the first quarter? Was it like something like four or something like
yeah,
that?
Think, yeah, I think he had
four for five. I think he was at the end of the first quarter. And just like, and he was smiling. It was sort of creepy. He was laughing a lot last night, I thought. So anyway, there, I think what my point is here, and what Sam's making the point on CBS Sports is like, man, I don't know. Is this the LeBron, young LeBron like run that we could potentially see from Luka here? I don't think it's that far fetched. With just the amount of like importance this guy has and like the touch he has on the game or the significance he has in every possession.
It's possible for sure. I think the Western Conference right now is stronger than the East was then. I think he's going to have to come across a couple teams, be it the next round. It's going to be the Jazz, and then whether it's the Lakers or the Suns or the Nuggets or Blazers. So I don't think it's going to be as easy a run if I remember correctly. LeBron, you know, obviously was absolutely incredible. But just watching this Clippers team kind of fall apart, they had 9 turnovers between their top two guys and Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. They still had a shot at the end. They didn't play hard from game one of this series. They were too cool for school. It's kind of hard comparing 07 and 21 and remembering the three teams LeBron played. But I think one of these next two teams, whoever they play, is going to be able to give it from the get-go, and their stars will play a little bit more cohesive basketball and be ready to go. And understand that we've got to get the ball out of Luka's hands a little bit more. But yeah, the Mavs are definitely stepping up around him, there's no doubt. But this game came down to one play in the end. And Terrence Mann, I think, he got a little bit of the yips there. He didn't want to lay it in, decided, I'm a young player, I'm going to pass it back. And Batum decided...
It was a great catch by Batum, by the way. It was like in a lot of traffic there that even to catch it and put it
up.
Wild.
It was a wild ending there. Wild ending.
Yeah.
I'm sure Kawhi was jumping around. Like he's J.R. Smith looking at LeBron James, give me the ball. And he didn't get it. Terrence Mann probably should have just laid it up. But it was a weird, strange, not a weird, it's just, it's probably pretty fitting for the Clippers to end it that way, because they're just not all on the same page at all times. But, you know, they were thrown off by the Boban thing because they were shooting threes a ton to start the game. But in the end, they shot a good percentage. All their guys contributed. It's just their top two guys were, you know, not good enough. Kawhi didn't play a great enough game. Paul George was pretty solid, but 9 turnovers combined. That's not playoff basketball, man.
So you think?
Yeah, I thought the execution also on that last play for Kawhi, like they ran him into the corner for the 3-pointer with what? I think there was 8.8 seconds remaining when they had the inbounds. Yeah. They were down by 3. They show the Chiron. Clippers, one of the best 3-point shooting teams in NBA history. We talked about it before the season. They're at 41%. You're thinking, if any team's going to be getting a good look at 3 here, it should be the Clippers. They just kind of ran a blah play to get a guy super covered down in the corner, Kawhi Leonard. Like, the Mavericks were all over him. It was like they knew the play was coming. He just kind of had to chuck it up, and then you got Rondo staring down Kawhi as they go back to the bench. That was weird stuff. It's like, I don't know. This is where you need your number one best 3-point play here. This is where you need to go deep in your bag and get something that works perfectly. And they ran a play that got Kawhi Leonard covered in the corner. He wasn't good enough, I didn't think, last night. And if he's not going to be your number one guy, and Luka is going to be that kind of number one guy, it's tough stuff for the Clippers.
One for seven from three. Reggie Jackson saved their ass. I mean, he was a monster in the third quarter. Yeah, it was 6 threes overall. Kawhi was he was 1 for 6 at that point from three when they decided to draw that baby up after the Terrence Mann, Nicola Batum debacle. And they needed a lot of saving to be done there.
Yeah, and Finney Smith, like, he was there. It was a good challenge for him. But Kawhi didn't. He just sort of threw it up. He had a little bit of time to at least try some other move, but he didn't really. He just sort of turned around and flung it up there straight away. So it didn't seem to be like a great executed play. Maybe that was how it was drawn up, though. He just wanted him in the corner. That's the Kawhi corner, maybe, that Ty Lue was going for there. But yeah, I mean, it wasn't close. He didn't have a chance with that one. It was ugly shot from someone who you know is going to get the ball. It's either him or Paul George, and it was missed by a mile. So just awful, awful end to the game for the Clippers.
Yeah, what is scary here as this goes to 6 for the Clippers? You know, it's in Dallas, okay, but the road teams won every game here. Maybe that continues. But I actually believe Luka when he's like, I didn't play that well. He had 42, 14, and 8. And he's actually not wrong. I mean, he just had a bad fourth quarter. He's like, yeah, I was missing shots I usually hit. Some of his guys that he was setting up, they were missing ones that they would normally knock down. It's like, he could have a better game here in game 6. Like, I wouldn't bet against it at this point, mm-hmm. Tess. Like, I mean, you
I
said,
don't
like,
know. That was pretty awesome.
It was, but what? I mean, I'm just not seeing any. They're not slowing him at all. I'm not sure anyone can, so I don't even want to just pick on the Clippers. But, like, there are plays where, like, he's. There was a play where he took a pick, he dribbled into the paint, then he sort of just dribbled backwards and turned around and flung up a three. Okay. Then there's many other times there's like three or four Clippers within 1 foot of him, and he's just, you know, casually, confidently hitting a little floater in the paint. Like, there's really no one I've seen or any game plan has been like, oh, that's going to work. That'll do it. That's slowing him down. Nothing. So it's like, I don't think it's that crazy to think he could do this again or even a better game. Because he's shot, like, how many times? 37 times
37,
in this game.
Yeah.
You know, not the highest percentage. I don't know. This guy's creepy good right now. It's got to be deflating if you're Ty Lue and the Clips to some extent. You're just, like, praying at this point that he misses. Or then, like, you're like, well, okay, now we got three guys on him. And like, okay, well, he's going to zip a pass to a guy that's open, that's capable, and we're just going to pray that he misses, be it Tim Hardaway or Finney Smith or whoever. I don't know.
Yeah, teams have to start treating him a little bit more like Steph Curry and just never, ever, ever give him space. Like, he is definitely doing the Steph Curry thing where you remember the classic highlight of Steph dribbling through four Clippers and then coming back to the three-point line and hitting a shot after, you know, it was sort of shut down by four Clippers, and he turns around and hits the shot. Like, that's what you're describing there, Skeets, mm-hmm. with Luka. It's kind of the same thing. He's just like, you know, zip, zip, zigzag. All right, I'll just go back out here and lean and shoot. But they're not, like, on him enough. I think that's what it is. They have to be pasted on him a little bit more. I think the Clippers are just, you know, a little too cool. Like, you know, we'll give him the three-point shot because he can hit everywhere else. I think there's just a little, still a little too much space for Luka. Just you got to treat him like Steph, I think, and make it a little bit harder. I mean, I think that was peak Luka. You know, it wasn't the best of percentages, whatever it is, 44%, 17 of 37, but he hit 6 threes, 42 and 14 and 8 rebounds. I think there was a reason he didn't have a good fourth quarter. Because he was a little gassed, and yeah. because the Clippers were, you know, a little bit more ready, and he took some tough shots, there's no doubt. So he walks off the floor like the competitor he is, and he says, "Sheet, I should have been a little bit better." But dude, you played 43 minutes, the ball was in your hands every stinking possession you're out on the floor. You're coming off a little bit of a stinger where you didn't look right. He had an incredible game, the Clippers are even lucky that. You know, some of Tim Hardaway's shots didn't go in and some of Dorian Finney-Smith's shots didn't go in.
Yeah.
Or else this would have been a real blow-up.
Yeah. I thought Dwight Powell actually played a good game for the Mavericks, too, just to show him a little love, being a Canadian.
Game-turning
homer.
Rebound in yeah. the third quarter, I thought. He had a humongous offensive rebound, kicked it out to Tim Hardaway Jr., THJ hits a three, and I don't think that the Mavericks trailed after that. Dwight Powell was great. They got contributions from their role players, even if it was basically just Luka out there doing the majority of the scoring and the creation. So, yeah, Luka star of the game, second star of the game for the Mavericks, has to be the massage therapist who got his shoulder back.
Yeah.
Come on, man. We were like, I don't know. I'm in this daily fantasy thing with the Top Shot Hot Boys and Girls and the No Dunks Discord. I didn't play Luka last night because he was coming in probable. It's like, we don't know what it's going to be, especially after the way game 4 had ended. And then he just says, yeah, my shoulder's actually fine. Put the whole team on him.
Yeah, I know. It's unbelievable. And I know you might be right, Tass, but I believe him. I was like, no, he can actually play better. Maybe it happens in game 6 or potentially a game 7. I actually think he can, which is insane that he's at this level right now. But let's keep it moving. Let's go to the Jazz. They took care of business early, Lili. They're moving on to the second round. Crushed the Grizzlies in game 5. So Memphis is now out of the playoffs. What are your takeaways either from this game, the Grizzlies season in a nutshell? Where do you want to go?
Well, clinical closeout game and an end to a series. It started off pretty much in the worst possible way. You know, a home loss and the franchise star not playing and calling out his own team. But that now does seem quite a long time ago as the Jazz are comfortably through here to the second round and they get now at least probably 3 or 4 days off to prepare for their next opponent, maybe even longer depending on what happens there with the Clippers and the Mavs series. The only real concern for them is Mike Conley left this game with hamstring tightness.
Yeah.
He didn't return. But this is also the same injury that cost him to miss quite a few weeks toward the end of the season there. So they will obviously be hoping for a 7-game series, I think, between the Clippers and the Mavs to give him a little bit of extra time to get that right. Now, I think considering the stage of the game, there was no need to bring him back either. But really, when you look at what happened with the Jazz last season down there in the bubble, obviously they had a 3-1 lead and they blew it. It wasn't even close. This one was a 20-point game in the first quarter. They put up 47 on the Grizzlies. And it was from there they basically just ran out the clock. And the Grizzlies fought, you know, good on them. They kept in it. They didn't quit by any means. But the Jazz were the better team in this series. And as the longer this series went on, I think they really showed that. Obviously, having Donovan Mitchell for the final four games certainly helped. He looked great again. The three-pointers were working and dropping for them. And, I think that's the thing. The Grizzlies took advantage of this, of the sort of chaos there in game one and the momentum they had of just getting into the playoffs. And the Jazz realized, okay, it's time to get down to it. And they did, and really showed they were the much better team. So they do now, no matter who they face, of course, they're going to be at home, so they're going to be rested. And if it's the Clippers or Mavs, one of those teams is basically probably only going to have a day or two off from their last game to get ready for a team that outside of Conley is fresh and ready and really starting to play good ball at both ends of the floor. So it's going to be tough. So it's a great position for the Jazz to be in. Again, considering how this started, it wasn't an auspicious start for them there, because they certainly didn't want to be in that position. But in the end, they take care of business, and we say goodbye to the Grizzlies, who really entertained us quite a lot this season. And they were fun to watch, but were really punching above their weight going up against a team like the Jazz.
Yeah, Jazz scored on 16 of their first 19 possessions in this game last night. 8 for 10 from three-point land. It was over very, very quickly. Mitchell was awesome tasks right from the jump. That was a good word there, Lee. Clinical closeout game. I like that. And even with his allergies that Donovan Mitchell is dealing with that he talked about after the game, he was pretty impressive. And then everybody was just raining in threes. Clarkson had a good run there. Gobert had a good game as well. What do you think of Memphis' season, though, Tass, as we say goodbye to them here for at least a couple months and start talking about what they'll be doing in the offseason, where they go from here? Like, this was a successful season, that's fair to say, right? And get those playoff reps for these young guys?
Great season for the Grizzlies. A great model for them, looking across the floor, looking at that Jazz team that's developed from within. A terrible ending there, giving up 75 first-half points to the Utah Jazz team. And then, they couldn't fight back from there. But it's got to feel good for the Grizzlies going into the offseason. Their biggest decision is, should we pick up Justice Winslow's team option? I mean, they have what they have, under contract. They have what they want going forward. So they got to be pretty pumped. Just like everybody else, got to be pretty pumped watching this Jazz team roll. What a great recovery after that Donovan Mitchell situation, that he was out the first game. And, the whole back and forth with the trainer. And then they rolled a 4 straight wins. That's great for everybody involved, because now we're talking about this Clippers-Mavs series and whether Luka can get there. I think you can, talk about so many teams of the Western Conference and say, who the heck is going to win this thing?
Yeah.
Like, it's wide open. So there should be a high level of curiosity for the average NBA fan looking at the second round, the third round, and even into the finals. No matter what people say about the Nets-Bucks series, whether or not that is going to dictate who the champion is, I think there's going to be lots of curiosity after that. I think watching this Jazz team roll the way they did heightens everybody. Like, no one outside Utah is really taking the Jazz seriously as a championship winner. No one's really picking them. Everybody's sort of waiting for somebody to pick them off, but it's great to see them roll the way they are. And hopefully Conley's fine, but I think the fact that they're playing well, and there's so many teams in the West, so many teams in the East going into the second round, it helps. It helps the casual fan get into it. The LeBron injury and Anthony Davis injury also helps. But it just feels like it's flat right now. I know the odds are in the Nets' favor to win this thing right now. And then it's, the Lakers are still around, but it's flattening out. And that's awesome for basketball fans. It's awesome for us, too.
Yeah, if we lose both LA teams over the next two nights, Trey, we'll be looking at a sort of a wild team coming out of the West. It would be down to what? Utah, Dallas. We still have Denver, Portland, and then it would be Phoenix in that scenario if the LA teams lose over the next two nights, with the Lakers playing tonight and then the Clippers playing on Friday night. But what did you think of the Jazz dominant victory here, or dominant series really after game one, and or the Grizzlies and what they do moving forward, what they need to work on? What do you think?
Well, I thought the Jazz were honestly incredible in this series. Game 5, very similar to Game 2, where they came out and took care of business basically right away, and the game was over almost as soon as it started. And that's kind of been the Jazz MO this series. We had to deal with the Donovan Mitchell drama in Game 1 because apparently he was right. His trainers were right. He should have been able to go because he has been lighting up the Grizzlies in this series. He was incredible. He didn't look rusty at all, maybe a little bit in that Game 2, but he was great last night, 30, and what he ended up with, 10 assists as well. As for the Grizzlies, you know, I think a great season. They went a little further than they did last year. They made it to the real playoffs. They got a playoff win, and they played this season without Jaren Jackson Jr. for the majority of the season. He only played 11 games. He really struggled in the playoffs, yeah. And I think that that is going to be huge to watch for the Grizzlies next year, because I'm seeing in the stream team a lot of people are comparing Kristaps to Jaren Jackson Jr. They're both good outside shooters. They're both big guys who have a lot of defensive potential. They both foul a lot, and sometimes they seem a little bit contact adverse. Ja's going to need a number two next to him, just like Luka does, and it's got to be, and if it's going to be a big guy who can stretch the court and shoot threes, he's got to be able to mix it up a little bit inside as well. So the Jaren Jackson Jr. development is going to be huge for me over the summer. He's got to stay healthy next season. He's got to be able to actually put together a full season on the court. But I would, I'm still optimistic about the Grizzlies. I'm still a big JJJ fan, and obviously Josh showed out in his first real playoff appearance.
Oh yeah, he was fantastic. And then you found this sort of like, I mean, some people knew, but Dylan Brooks obviously having some moments in a playoff series, like, he's of course going to be a rotational player for your squad, and how hard he plays and how he gets under the other team's skin. And he can give you some buckets when he catches on fire. And then even rookies, I think, like in Desmond Bane has looked good at times during the season, and Tillman's had moments. They're like, they always are bringing it up, right? They're one of the youngest squads, or they were, I guess, the youngest squad in terms of average age in the playoffs. So yeah, you're pretty confident moving forward, but Jaren Jackson Jr. is the big, big question mark. Like, you're right, Trey. Is he a potential star? Can he just stay on the floor? Can he stay healthy? And what can he do to pair with Ja Morant? Or is he not that? And, I mean, look, Valanciunas was awesome this year. Can Valanciunas continue to do this? Like, no, he's not like a star.
Well, honestly, that's a little bit of a problem for the Grizzlies.
Maybe.
Like, Valanciunas had an incredible season. He was probably the Grizzlies' MVP this season. The way he held it down inside, the toughness he brought to him, the veteranship, and the consistency, being there every single night. But if Jonas Valanciunas is your second best player in the Western Conference, you're probably going to be stuck in that play-in tournament for a while. They need their lottery picks to really pan out.
Yeah, I mean, this guy averaged 17 and 13 basically this year, Valanciunas did. What's his contract situation, Tess? Do you have it in front of you? I don't remember where he is. Is he coming up for another payday soon?
They just re-signed him, didn't they?
Yeah, he's locked up for $14 million next year as well. Yeah. Okay, so yeah, he did the three-year 45 back in 19. So. Hell of a deal for Jonas Valanciunas, isn't it, when you think about that? It's a good contract.
So
yeah, for sure. So let's see. Great season for the Grizzlies. And yeah, at least we got Ja Morant in a couple of playoff games, which nobody's going to be upset about. And he had some awesome, awesome games going up against the number one team in the West, in the Utah Jazz. The one good thing the Grizzlies gave us while they said goodbye, too, was another wedgie from Jaren Jackson Jr. Maybe that's a sign of things to come for
Huge.
Next year. Look at this snowflake.
Wow.
So unique. Yeah, the alley-oop wedgie, like sort of tip alley-oop. Yeah, there. John Morant throwing it to Triple J. Nice shot. Great camera work there from the TNT broadcast. 56.
Woo.
We stand out right now. I mean, 60's in play. We're not even out of the first round.
Doubt.
Oh, I'd love to get one more first round wedgie. That would be nice. And then maybe just try and get at least one in every sort of round for the rest of the way. That would get us to 60. The math would work out there. So good on you, Jaren Jackson Jr., for sticking wedgie 56.
And seeing that alley-oop, the lob for the tip, reminded me, we should have had a nice laugh about that Luka alley-oop that he caught on the fast break, where he just was running, looked like he was ready for a big dunk, just guided it in gently. That was very nice, to a couple of sweet tip oops last night.
Yeah, because that's, even at our run, you don't usually get the one-handed oop. It's usually the two-hand catch and then the layup.
Well, did you see John Collins? Last night? That was
incredible. That was cool.
Yeah,
I think he caught it on the one side and then in one motion, turned and flicked it off the glass. That was amazing.
Yeah.
Good night for oops, wedgies included. Okay, let's take a quick break before we get to the other games from last night.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Shakalaka in the stream team says, the 360 fart that I do, the jump fart, is worse than, I assume he means picking your ear and then smelling
yeah.
it. No, it's not.
No way.
No.
No way.
No. What I am doing is comical.
Yes.
It is harmless.
Mm-hmm.
There's no smell, actually. It's like, it's almost like it's a sound effect that's been added.
Purely audio.
Yeah. You're whirling it away. Like, whatever smell there is, it's just gone.
It's gone. It's like an airplane.
That's right.
That's insane.
So, yeah, but, okay, well, does anybody else pick their ear and smell the wax, I guess, that they've dug out, Trey?
I haven't done the smelling part, but smelling your earwax is getting honestly great reviews in the stream team. People are like, oh yeah, you gotta smell it. You gotta get a whiff of that wax.
Wow.
I don't know why, so I guess I'm behind the curve here. My only wax thoughts are like, I haven't used a Q-tip ever since Tass told me not to, but I think I'm gonna go fingers and sniffs from now on.
Yeah. Nothing bigger than your finger, I'm told.
Yeah.
Yep. Tass always said that. Tass has been saying that.
Yeah,
for
sure.
Years.
Sure. Doctors said it too, but until Tass said it, that's when I really believed it.
I unfortunately still don't listen to doctor's orders or Tass's orders because I love the feeling of a Q-tip, of a cleaning an ear with a Q-tip. God, that's a great sensation.
Me too. I'm never giving it up.
No
Tass.
Way.
Sorry.
Yeah. But I'd rather go deaf, I guess, than give up that sensation.
I'll be there in the hospital for you, JD. I'll pick my earwax and let you smell it while you're sitting in your hospital bed after you punctured your eardrum with a Q-tip.
True friend right
or,
there.
I mean, the thing is, you're an audio man, JD. You could be shoving that Q-tip in there and not just puncturing your eardrum. I mean, that could be a slip-up. But you could flick a piece of wax onto your eardrum. It would be there permanently. And then you would be hearing Lee Ellis's voice as you edit just reverberate on your eardrum over and over. And just, oh, man, that would be rough. It would be rough for you.
Yeah.
You would just, what would you do? Just play DJ and just take one headphone off your ear, maybe?
Yeah.
All right.
Just like that. I don't mind it, actually.
Yeah, it looks cool, too. Okay, let's get to the other games from last night there. That sort of took a weird turn, didn't it? Our next game, Trae Young scored 36 points. The Hawks finish off the Knicks in Game 5. Yes, in MSG. This one is over. I was wrong. We thought it was going 7. No, no, no. The Hawks win in 5. TK, take it away, man. What's your big takeaway?
Yeah, coming into this series, Skeets, like you're saying, felt like a coin flip. Had a few Knicks in 7 picks. Hawks, the more talented team, not very much experience, but they really got going in the second half of this season. The Knicks, probably overachieved during the year, but they had an identity and they had the Garden. Seemed like it was going to be a major factor in this series, a large part of why I went Knicks in seven. Turns out the Garden was a huge factor in reverse, because for the third time this series, Trae Young fed off the Garden's energy, gave him 30-something, then taunted the crowd. Another star-making performance for Ice Trae. 36 points, 9 assists, joining Michael Jordan as the only visiting players with 3 straight 30-point games at Madison Square Garden in the playoffs. And it came with another perfect bit of trash talk. Trae Young hits a step-back 30-footer. As the Garden crowd is giving the Knicks a standing ovation for their incredible season, then hits them with a gentlemanly bow at half court. Even Reggie Miller was like, this guy is Reggie Miller 2.0. After the game, Trae Young said, I know there are a lot of shows in this city, and I know what they do when the show is over. Incredible from Trae Young to rise to the moment, to show up in the moment like that, to put the team on his back, to get a huge win, to lock it down, and then to go out with an incredible taunt that's going to make Knicks fans love this guy for the entirety of his career. Great stuff from Trae Young, but honestly a great team win for the Hawks. I thought John Collins was excellent last night playing that defense, giving you some physicality. Clint Capella called out the Knicks, said, we're going to go into Madison Square Garden, beat you, and the series is over. And then he did it, dominated inside. Yep. DeAndre Hunter had some timely shots. He was a big part of the defense on Julius Randle as well. Kevin Herter's defense was good. He made some plays. And Onyeka Okongwu even got a few minutes here. Had a huge block, some big offensive rebounds. The Hawks were locked in last night. They took care of business. Incredible win in Game 5 and a great series for Atlanta.
Yeah, got a little spicy there at halftime too, Lili, where Nerlens Noel, I believe it was, threw the shoulder into Trae Young as they're sort of crossing paths. And, you know, Trae brushed it off. He had a good laugh about it. But I liked Solomon Hill, actually, you know, saw it happen, coming behind Trae Young. Okay, well, I'll step to you. They're not going to be upset if I get a tech or they lose me here for the second half. So got to stick up for my guy. I honestly love that. I love to see that, especially when it's like the star player that's like trying to get like intimidated or whatever, pushed around a little bit. You got to have a vet guy to say, no, you're not going to do that to I. You're not going to punk our guy. But this was an awesome win from the because they didn't even shoot that well. I mean, it wasn't this was not the prettiest game I've ever watched, for sure. Both teams struggling to shoot the ball, but yeah, that second half, they just wouldn't relinquish the lead. They sort of had an answer for every time the Knicks sort of like made a little bit of noise. Had a couple baskets in a row, it would be like a Lou Williams, you know, corner three was big, and like the Hunter one, like Trae said, they just had always an answer, which sometimes with Atlanta sports, the butt cheeks get real tight and clench up. You're like, uh-oh, how's Atlanta going to blow this? But not at all. It was sort of pretty dominant there in the second half.
The Knicks' offense just didn't have enough variety, and the Hawks' defense, I thought, was really good. Guys contesting shots, grabbing rebounds, and just making it very difficult. They got a lot of Reggie Bullock early, which was fine for the Knicks. He can shoot the three, but really, you were wondering where that offense was coming from. Derrick Rose has been their best player this season, you know, he was, or in this series. Julius Randle finished with a decent line, but he'd never really got going at all in this series. I thought the Hawks did just a fantastic job on him. And outside of that, they just didn't have enough creators. It was more just kind of getting RJ Barrett a three. Emmanuel quickly gave him some threes, but there was no real sort of solid way of the team scoring. And then on the other end, the Hawks did have guys who were contributing. Kevin Huerter was pretty good for them in this series. He scored a couple of times off the bench. Trae obviously set the table for everyone. John Collins stayed on the court, and he was much better as this series went on. And they just, you know, Lou Williams was good coming off the bench, giving them what they needed. And I think Nate McMillan called on Trae a little earlier in that fourth quarter last night. He was like, let's just close this one out. Even though Lou hit a three, but he wanted to just make sure this one didn't slip away. And even, you know, in the last sort of 3 or 4 minutes where it looked pretty comfortable, it was just like the Knicks just weren't able to find any sort of way of getting inside to get an easy basket. And the Hawks always had an answer. DeAndre Hunter hit a big three. So, you know, it was just a really impressive series here from Atlanta the whole way, considering Trae Young, again, first time in the playoffs and his first series in Madison Square Garden. And he, apart from game two that they lost, and they kind of blew that one when they led by nearly 20 points in it. Other than that, I mean, he was not intimidated, not afraid of the moment to hit those big shots. And he didn't just fall in love with the three-pointer this series. So many times it was like, if there was a defender out, he was like, I'm just going to cook this guy and go right past him and go in for those sort of Steve Nashy, like, scoopy layups there. And he was very effective doing that. and finding his guys on the perimeter. So just a very, very impressive performance. It's going to get much tougher for him, I think, in the second round. But for his first time in the playoffs, outstanding performance. And that little halftime incident you talk about there with Nerland Noel, I mean, wasn't an accident. Noel was trying to send him a message. Not. And then Trey sort of looked back at first to be like, oh, someone just bumped into me. And then he just did the odd like, you just see, you know, it's like he's wearing a suit. It reminded me of the movie Con Air where Cameron Poe gets shot in the arm and he just shakes it off like that. He just keeps on walking. But, I mean, honestly, though, like what a way to get your playoff career underway in Madison Square Garden. The crowd basically ran out of chants. They had nothing to chant because they're like, we can't chant at him anymore. I think they went with the Trey is balding when the game was basically over there. But it was like, even then, the crowd wasn't really – there was not the same ferocity of – is that the word, ferocity? In their voice. They weren't like in those first two games.
Ferocity.
Ferocity, that's it, yeah. Really trying to get him off his game. Instead, they were kind of like, we can't, guys. He's going to cook us if we do this. So instead, let's just try to, you know, make fun of him because he is thinning a little bit on top. But at that point, it didn't really matter. Super, super impressive. I'm super happy for Nate McMillan, honestly. Again.
Hasn't won a lot of playoff series.
No, he hasn't. And I said yesterday, I was wrong about him. He's done a very, very good job organizing that team and keeping them stable and just, you know, throughout this whole series. They've never, ever really looked like they've been out of control at all. And the Knicks, apart from that one surge in really game two, the Hawks have been in complete control this series.
Tass, anything to add to this?
Yeah, it's always funny with a coach who hasn't had success. People label him as a loser. Oh, Nate McMillan can't win. Well, you get the better team, you win. And now you're a good coach again. So great for Nate McMillan. You did it. And you did it because Trae Young played like himself from game one. He took on the challenge. He did the shoulder shrug from game one. They tried to rattle him over and over and over again. Yeah, the Nerlens Noel bump, everybody trying to get under his skin. That was their goal. He didn't get shooken at all. He didn't get shaken whatsoever. And Julius Randle did. I mean, he came into his first playoff performance, and he didn't play well one game.
Let's be honest. Like, this guy had an awesome year. He might be at the end of it on some people's top five MVP lists. He'd probably be an all-NBA player. He had an awesome, awesome year. He was horrible in this series. It got to the point every game, I mean, you saw it last night, I thought, it was like, he's just like, I can't possibly keep missing, so I'll just keep shooting very difficult shots. And it's like, oh, yeah. No.
And he actually had his best field goal percentage of the series, which wasn't a good night. But the reason why, even though Trae Young really didn't have a good night shooting it. He was 10 of 28, 35%. Mm-hmm. That's not good.
No.
But Julius Randle kept giving the ball back to the Hawks. He had 8 turnovers.
Yeah.
And so even if you look at the raw numbers and say, that was Julius Randle's best game, it wasn't because he just kept giving it back over and over and over again. 8 turnovers, that's a freaking lot of turnovers. So one guy stepped up to the big bright lights, and Julius Randle, who's desperately needed because this Knicks offense – it's anemic, when Julius Randle's got it going. So they needed him. And Trae Young showed, throughout the series how good he is. But even when he had a bad night, I think the fact that that offense is just, it's pretty stacked. You know, like John Collins, I think it was a trickle-down effect. Maybe John Collins didn't come in with a very good series in his opening playoff appearance. But I think it's a trickle-down effect of Trae Young's confidence, and then everybody starts rolling, and then John Collins got going at the end of the series here. So when they face the Sixers next round, it's just key to start the series off well, and hopefully Trae does the same thing. Doesn't get shook from day one and can keep it going, and it gets down to everybody else on that talented roster.
Yeah, again, we'll make our predictions for that series and really break it down in detail on tomorrow's Drop podcast, but it's going to be a lot different for Trae Young playing the Sixers with the amount of length and defensive guys, Trae, that they can throw on him. And Simmons, of course, could be on him at times. Matisse Thybulle could just be given that the opportunity to try and lock him up. A lot different than what a great defensive Knicks team, but like just those guys as solo defenders, one-on-one defenders with the size that they have and still the speed. Fascinated to see if Trae Young and Nate McMillan can sort of figure it out and unlock him still in that series.
Yeah, and I still have confidence that Trae Young can perform against both Ben Simmons and Matisse Thybulle. We've seen in the past that if there's one weakness a guy like Ben Simmons has, it's a tiny, shifty guard, and that's exactly what Trae Young is going to be, just because, I mean, Simmons is able to give a little bit of space because he has the length to be able to challenge the shots, but, you know, Trae's going to have a little bit of a quickness advantage on him. It's just going to be on him to figure out how to use it in this next series, but the chess match of that is going to be incredible because, like you're saying, Simmons can take some turns on Trae Young, and surely his size will present some problems for Trae at some point. And then when he gets tired, hey, here's Matisse Thybulle, yeah, another guy who might even be a better perimeter defender there. So that's without even thinking maybe Danny Green will get a chance here. But I don't know, Bogdan Bogdanović didn't have a huge game last night. He's been pretty instrumental for the Hawks in the second half of the season. But, you know, the Sixers are going to have a guy to be able to throw on him as well. So it'll be interesting to see just how efficient of looks Trae Young's able to get against the Sixers. Because coming into this series, we thought maybe he would struggle a little bit with the Knicks defense. They have been harassing guards for the entire season. Was not a problem at all for Trae Young in round one.
Yeah. And will the Sixers, unlike the Knicks, go at Trae Young on the other end too? I mean, we talked about it. Trae Young didn't have to do anything defensively. I mean, most of the time he was on Reggie Bullock. Yeah. I was like, all right, we'll stay on him. He's not driving. He's not attacking. You know, he might hit some threes, but we'll live with that, like you said, Lee. Mm-hmm. And he hit a couple. He was keeping the Knicks sort of like in this game, if you want to say, early in the game. But I'm excited to see the Doc River and the Sixers. I imagine they're going to try and put Trae Young in a lot more action on the defensive end and try and tire him out that way and, you know, try and exploit him because that's his one weakness, of course, defensive, because of the size issues and stuff like that. So can't wait. We'll get into it in greater detail tomorrow. But as before we wrap up here, what do you make of your New York Knicks season there, Lele? 41 wins, the fourth seed. You know, again, Julius Randle, like, sort of playing at an all-NBA level, the resurgence of Derrick Rose, you know, Tibbs culture there. Give it a grade. How would you grade the Knicks season?
B+, I think, for sure. I mean, a much better result than I think maybe a lot of us expected as far as getting home court in that first round. Obviously, it didn't work out all that well for them in the end, but Thibodeau came in and did have an immediate impact, and that's kind of what he has done in the past. The question going forward will be, will he be able to continue to have such an impact in his next couple of seasons there? If he can, then I think the Knicks are on the right path. The one concern is that Derrick Rose at 32 came in and really was a lot, maybe their second best player down the stretch. And that's where I think they need to improve. I think RJ Barrett showed some real potential this season. Obviously, Julius Randle, if he finishes an All-NBA season, that'll be fantastic for him. And I think he's going to get better as well next season. And this playoff experience should make him better, realizing that he has to improve and up his game come playoff time. I think Mitchell Robinson's a big, big thing for them as well. I think they missed him in this series. He's a big athletic guy who can impact the game on both ends for them. And really, they had Taj Gibson and Nerlens Noel as the center piece for this team as their centers, and I think Mitchell Robinson does improve them. So I think Emmanuel Quickley was a great draft pick. He's shown that he can be an impactful player, kind of like his hero Lou Williams, I think, being a six man coming off the bench. So they've got some pieces there, and certainly they want to build on this, and they need to be better next season. They'll come in with higher expectations, but they kept their draft picks. They didn't make any silly mistakes this season. Their salary cap sheet is pretty open, so they are in a much better position than they have been in years gone by. Mm-hmm. And I think overall, considering where the Knicks have been for so long, this was a remarkable success for them.
Yep, I would agree with that. It's just unfortunate, I think, that Randall's season ended the way it did here after an awesome 72 games to have these stinkers here in the playoffs. But a lot of credit does have to go to the Hawks, and I thought Hunter was awesome on him at times, and he's a great, great defender, despite giving up a little bit of size to Randall. Anyway, good series. Thought it would go seven, but the Hawks, moving on, and they'll play the Sixers, because the final game last night, without Embiid, Sixers rolled past the Wizards and into the second round. I laughed so hard at one of the opening lines in the AP report for this game. Man, I felt just old, I guess, reading this. Ben Simmons, it says, challenged Seth Curry during an afternoon Call of Duty session to score 30 points and send the 76ers into the next round of the playoffs. These guys are hanging out, playing Call of Duty. Yeah, Ben Simmons like, come on, Seth. Drop a 30 tonight. No Embiid? Go get it, man. Hey, also, nice shot. Nice snipe there. I just, like, was starting to think about, like, I don't know. What would be the equivalent? I guess, like, Scottie Pippen telling John Paxson to go out and drop 15 while they were playing, like, Atari FIFA or something. I don't know. Yeah.
Golf.
Yeah, I guess they were actually
right, like, that's
doing
the
something.
Thing is, like, you would go out and golf if it were the 1990s. Now you're just hopping on and playing some Call of Duty. I thought the exact same thing, Skeets. Like, somebody's going to go back in 30 years and be like, what? This is the lead here? These guys were chatting during a video game and then it went out and played out. Very funny.
Yeah, Simmons got the start at center because no Embiid. He was great, 19, 11, and 10. He had the triple-double. Tobias Harris was awesome, 28 points. Ben Lely, 5 of 8 at the line. You know, better. Good enough, especially when it comes to the hack of Ben strategy. And I thought Tyrese Maxey was awesome. Lot of energy he gave the Sixers, and they, at a time when they were looking for a little juice in this game, he had 9 points in the first half, played really well in the entire series when he got his chances out there, and I wonder if we'll see more of him, again, that youthful energy in a second-round series versus the Hawks. But the big question to ask, we're just waiting on, really, right, is Joel Embiid. He's diagnosed with the small lateral meniscus tear in the right knee, and he's day-to-day, and it's like, is he going to be playing in game one versus the Hawks? Is he done for the season, heaven forbid? Is he just going to put off surgery and try and like play through this? That's the massive question mark. Because I guess I'll ask you again, we'll get into this tomorrow, but could the Hawks beat this team with no Joel Embiid? Like, if he didn't play at all, Hawks could do that, couldn't they?
Yeah. Yeah, they could. I think they could. I think there's a good chance there. We all await that news from Joel Embiid. In the meantime, we'll all just play Call of Duty and think about what Joel Embiid will do coming back. There's no need to feel old. You play video games, Skeets. Get on there, man. Jump off this and go play some video games. Feel young again.
No, I'm going to play actual basketball today with my man TK. We're going to go shoot some hoops today. We're getting outside.
That's right. I'm going to challenge you to make 30 jumpers.
All right. That's not going to happen. I haven't played basketball in a long time.
That's fine. I'll come with a triple-double, which will be rebounding your misses and then passing it back to you to actually make the shot. Sometimes I'll get a putback here.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, the scary thing is... other than your basketball play today, might be some bricks out there, is Joel Embiid was diagnosed with this in his rookie season. He had the same diagnosis, and he ended up having to have surgery and miss the rest of the season. Now, this could be different, but it is a little scary. Back then, they decided, okay, let's shut you down. That was the rookie season where he didn't win Rookie of the Year. If you remember, he just played over 30 years. It was the 16-17 season. This small meniscus tear. And then they signed him to an extension in the offseason. So that was then. This is hopefully different because otherwise everybody's playing well going into round two against the Hawks. You know, with Seth Curry balling, looking so confident. It wasn't just three-point shooting. Looking like he can do it inside and outside. Ben with the triple-double and Tobias Harris. He had 28 and 6. Best sign, though, he had 10 free throws in this game. So all those guys, if they're playing to their capabilities, it seems like a great recipe for Joel Embiid to make his run. And that's why you got to be excited as an NBA fan. If Joel Embiid can get back on the floor with the Nets and the Bucks, being at their peak selves and everything going on in the Western Conference is exciting stuff. But Joel Embiid, that's the scary thing. I mean, he was on the floor warming up before this game. Mm-hmm. Maybe that bodes well for this weekend, Sunday, when they get going.
Yeah, game one, Sunday in Philly, when they host the Hawks, 76ers do. I mean, look, I think he's going to try and play. I think he's going to put off the, you know, he could have surgery, I'm sure, on this, but you don't have to, and he'll give it a go. You just hope, of course, he doesn't make it worse somehow in playing in these games. So we'll see. How do you guys feel about the Sixers fans chanting, "We want Brooklyn," in this game? I was like, wow. That's fascinating. Going right to there. I mean, look, they're confident that they can take care of the Hawks, Lee, but chanting, "We want Brooklyn." You don't even know if you're seeing Brooklyn, man.
Yeah, that'd be hilarious. Maybe that's they're trying to get into the Bucks' head by saying, "We don't even think you're a chance." They're trying to motivate the Bucks because they think they're a better matchup against Milwaukee. Maybe.
Okay.
All sorts of crazy things happen in Philadelphia. So it's sort of, I guess, on par for the fans there. I mean, that's the thing. This series won't be all that much different, I think, for Trae Young going into an environment like that in Philadelphia.
Right.
They're going to be onto him from the start as well. So it's going to be tough. But look, the Joel Embiid thing, I don't pretend to have any idea what a meniscus, how serious that injury is. But to hear meniscus tear and be day-to-day kind of doesn't seem right. It seems like that's going to be something that he could potentially do more damage to. So I just hope that he's healthy and fine and can play, because that's what we always want in a playoff series, is all the best players playing. We don't want it to be decided by injuries at all. So,
you know, it's just awful timing for him. But Philadelphia showed last night that, you know, obviously it's against the Wizards here, who were sort of playing for their playoff life. They've got some players playing really well. Seth Curry has been excellent for Philadelphia, and it figures that he's going to have a big series as well, or going to be relied on. They've got other guys who are contributing, and Ben Simmons, his versatility, be able to play point guard and or center if necessary, shows that they can go small if necessary to match other teams. So it should be a great series, and I just hope everyone is healthy, and you know, I just hope that Joel Embiid doesn't, you know, risk doing more significant injury to that knee by playing, because like I say, a tear just sounds gross.
No, it's not good. I can't believe all four Eastern Conference series ended in, what, five games or less. They're all set, those two second-round series in the East. Again, we'll break them down on tomorrow's Drop podcast, so join us at 10 a.m. Eastern live back here on YouTube as we preview and predict those. But, wow, the Hawks, I mean, really was the surprising one. But it is nice to see those three that were the elite teams in the East. I mean, they took care of business. You know, the Bucks sweeping, and then the Nets and the Sixers. Yeah, okay, they gave up one, but those closeout games to not make sure it didn't go any longer, to make sure somebody else doesn't have the potential to get injured, and crazy things like that to happen. Here we go. Like, this second round in the East looks very enticing, Trey. Both of these matchups, I think, especially with how the Hawks played and are, like, sort of clicking with everybody contributing, these should be some fun series.
100%, Skates. We knew going into the playoffs that the top three in the East were the upper echelon, so it's cool to see that they advanced. We got the 2 and 3, like we said. Bucks versus Nets could be the NBA champion, could easily be in that series. And like you're saying, the Hawks were so impressive in round one. Couple that with Embiid's injury, and even if he's on the court, if he's playing at a lesser level, if he's at 80% of Joel Embiid, that really gives the Hawks a chance, because Capella's good, man. Like, Capella and Trae Young, the pick and roll, if Joel Embiid's not able to move out there, that could really put the Sixers in some tough positions to be able to stick with Trae on the perimeter while also dealing with the roll, man. Maybe you're asking a lot too much from Dwight Howard at that point. Maybe you got to take a turn with Mike Scott, which would be another advantage for the Hawks. I don't know. The injury to Embiid sucks for the Sixers, but it makes that second round series very, very interesting, because, you know, the Hawks played so well in round one, and they did it against an opponent who came in with a defensive reputation as well. They just kept hanging points on them time and time again while playing their own solid defense as well.
Can't wait. That one, Hawks-Sixers, game one on Sunday. Can't wait for this weekend's games, actually. But we still have Tweet of the Night for this show, but before we get to that, quick break, hear from our sponsors.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Whoa! Mac is back! You ever wish you could have it both ways? I do. Like a zero-calorie cheeseburger, or staying up late but not feeling exhausted in the morning. Guys tend to think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort, but you can have it both ways with Mack Weldon. Mack Weldon makes timeless apparel with modern performance fabrics for guys who want to look and feel sharp without sacrificing comfort. From their light-as-air underwear to innovative anti-odor tees and versatile yet comfortable pants, Mack Weldon has a full range of clothes that never go out of style. I've got some polos, some tees, some undies, and I love them. Simple, soft, stylish. In fact, I'm wearing Mack Weldon right now. Mack Weldon clothes are designed to fit your style and the demands of modern life. They look like regular clothes, but feel like the latest in modern comfort. If you told me my silver PK polo was made from 100% cotton, I would 100% believe you. But those antimicrobial silver threads keep me feeling fresher longer. Get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code NODUNKS. That's MackWeldon.com, promo code NODUNKS.
Let's get to Tweet of the Night.
Tweet of the Night. Wow.
Twitter.
What do you got, TK?
Oh, big night on the tweet street skates. On yesterday's Beach Steppin', Raph sent in a question asking us what other networks could host first round playoff series. And I suggested that Hawks versus Knicks could be on Bravo because there's been a lot of drama during that series. And then I pitched some potential taglines for these players in the style of Real Housewives. If you didn't see it yesterday, take a look. Here's Julius Randle. I won most improved because I'm living my best life. Here's Trae Young. Your arena is quiet because my game is loud. Last one, Tom Thibodeau. Life isn't all basketball and icing pick and rolls, but it should be. Sounds great with the theme behind it. Skeets, yesterday on the show you said clip it and ship it. So we did. JD clipped it off. And I shipped it right to Andy Cohen, executive producer of basically every show on Bravo TV. And guess what? Yep. Andy responded with the tweet of the night. I don't know who he's talking about, but this is good content. This is one of the greatest compliments in my life. Good content from the king of content himself, Andy Cohen. Maybe I should have hit him with some St. Louis baseball players for it to really hit home. But I was happy it made its way to at Andy. I was happy that he considers this great content. And I can't wait to explain everything on Watch What Happens Live, which I will be on tonight at 3 a.m. Eastern time. Tune in. Bravo TV.
No, you're not.
No, I'm not.
Oh, yeah. I thought maybe there's a possibility.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's a streamed show at this point. So look, man, if you want me to hop in your StreamYard, just send me the code, or we could catch up at a Dead & Company show. I'm sure he'll be there as well.
So Andy's a Cardinals fan, like you said. So he's a baseball fan. I guess obviously not much of a basketball fan. If he had no idea what you were talking about,
yeah, I don't think so.
He's like, who is he? Who's Tom Thibodeau? What the heck? That's fantastic. I'm happy to see that.
I was thrilled to see that as well. That guy is kind of the GOAT TV host to me right now, at least. He's the guy that I look up to the most. I love that guy.
Go ahead, Lee. You've got a hilarious line, a hilarious joke.
Yeah, let's go back.
Now you gotta say it.
His name should be Andy Cohen Tent.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Cohen-tent. Clip it and ship it. See if you retweet that.
Clip it and ship it, baby.
We got to pull a clip from every show and send it to Andy Cohen from here on out for the rest of the playoffs. All right,
is this good content? Thanks, Andy.
Way to, in a way, you basically got tweet of the night yourself. So smooth move there, TK. I love to see it. Okay, tonight's games, we've got two games on. That's it. We can focus, guys, tonight. Nuggets, Blazers, game six. Portland trying to stay alive at home. Denver can close it out on the road. And then we have the Suns-Lakers game six. I do not know yet whether or not Anthony Davis is going to play. I don't know if anybody has more of an update. Team doctors, last I saw, are going to decide to ask whether or not they're going to let him go in a must-win game six here for LeBron and the Lakers at home. These should be some spicy games here with two teams fighting to stay alive and two teams definitely wanting to like, try and end it when they have an opportunity.
LeBron and Damian Lillard facing elimination. That's pretty neat on the same night. Looking forward to both games. I'm digging in. Damian Lillard drained my battery on all my devices two nights ago. I'm looking to do the same tonight. Give us a double, triple OT, Dame.
We got a message here. I just want to slip this in before we wrap this up. It was on Instagram. I won't even try to say the handle's name because it's sort of crazy. I think they made it just to send us the DM. Zero followers, zero posts on IG. But anyway, they were upset. Well, Lee, listen up. And they're upset with everybody, but quote, you guys treat LeBron as if he's immune to criticism. Lee guaranteed a D-bag sweep when the Lakers tied it up at one apiece. All four of you took the Lakers in the series. LeBron just rage quitting game five with 6 minutes to go in the fourth quarter, Did you guys even address that? Of course. LeBron is washed, says this random person, male or female, I'm not sure, on Instagram. Lee, would you like to respond to this anonymous person?
Listen, anonymous person, just say who you are, man. No one's going to fight you. No one's going to like get upset. Just say who you are. Just don't hide.
It's like Nuevo Vesuvio 0910.
But that's like he's hiding for something. He's somebody else. It must be someone. Just tell us who you are, man. If you want to talk, yeah, we were wrong. I was wrong. I thought a D-bag sweep was coming, and now Lakers remain favorite tonight because it's in Los Angeles and they still have LeBron. I don't mind being wrong, man. I don't mind it. You know, and listen, after I said that, anyway, it was because Chris Paul looked like his shoulder was about to fall off. So, and Davis was playing well. The Lakers had stolen home court advantage. So it's not like we were just like, the Suns are crap. They can't win this. The facts and the evidence that we'd seen suggested LeBron was probably going to close out this series in five games. He's done that in the past. So, you know, but it hasn't happened. I'm not like running or hiding from that.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way it goes sometimes. I mean, we've watched so much basketball. You see patterns and trends over years and years, and you're like, this is LeBron. He's just, you know, he's fresh. He's ready. The Lakers are going to win this, but they haven't. So good luck to the Suns tonight. Good luck to the Lakers. May the best team win. But I mean, I just don't respect someone who creates an obvious burner account
right.
to have a shot. Just say who you are and talk to us, man.
Sure.
That's all.
Sure.
That's all you have to do. Don't be that wheezily and whiny. I don't have any burner accounts. Is any of you guys?
No.
I don't see the point.
I can barely keep up with one account.
Oh, but. I know. So just say who you are, man. Don't be so scared to actually put your name to what you really want to say, whoever you are.
Okay.
So say it. You obviously watch a show. You're going to hear this. Tell us who you are.
Okay. Right, maybe we'll get a response. I mean, you can slide back into the DMs there. We'll check them out. But, you know, it is. I'm just like, I thought it was interesting because we were all sitting here going into game five. Like, oh, wow. What type of LeBron are we going to get? Man, this is going to be something crazy. No AD, 2-2. Wow. And, you know, LeBron, he was not checked out, but he just sure wasn't the aggressive LeBron that we've become accustomed to. And credit to the Suns, how they play him. They play him physically. You know, you've got Crowder. Mikal Bridges is a good defender. They got guys they can throw on him. But, like, it was weird. Is Father Time taking a lead here is what we're getting at here with LeBron. That's fair. There's your criticism, Nuevo. We'll find out maybe tonight. Or he'll make us look silly like LeBron has done millions of times before.
And it seems like it's going to be one of those things that we have to know basically right away, because when LeBron is in must-win mode, it's a post-up almost every single time, right? Bump, 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 bump. Make a play, make a layup, whatever it is. He just does it for 48 minutes. So if you see LeBron posting up in the first three possessions tonight, then it seems like he's a little bit more tapped in. Because you're right, in Game 5, it was some strange stuff. I thought there was a lot of clogged lanes that LeBron was seeing, and maybe some of that is the personnel that they had out there, and a lot of it was the Suns doing a great job of saying, we're just going to be waiting for you here. Yeah. Have somebody else do something. Nobody else did anything, and LeBron looked out of it. There's no doubt. So, got to be much better in Game 6.
Yeah. Tass, any predictions for Suns-Lakers tonight? What's your gut say? Is this going 7?
Yeah. I'm taking LeBron in a game where, of course, he's going to win. He's the best player in the world. Unnamed guy on Instagram. Yeah, I'm taking Bron. I think it goes 7.
Okay. I can't wait to be talking about LeBron. How many free throws will LeBron take tonight? And that's going to be you watch the storyline coming out of this one. Oh, Silver phoned it in. He wants a game 7 with LeBron. Yeah, we'll be talking about it tomorrow. I'll guarantee it. Okay. That's it for us. Another long one, man. These playoff shows. There's lots to talk about. We had 4 games on last night. Like I said, tomorrow's drop podcast. We'll be recapping tonight's, hopefully, instant classic games between the Nuggets Blazers and then the Suns Lakers. And we will start previewing and predicting all the series that we know in the second round. We know the Eastern Conference matchups. So we'll put some numbers on those series. And we might, I guess it's possible, know who the Jazz are playing if... The Nuggets win.
That's the other series, isn't it?
Yeah. We could know someone else if the Nuggets win tonight. But I'm too... Oh, the Nuggets and
well,
Suns
Well, if the Nuggets and
win.
Suns
yeah,
win,
that's it.
That's the thing.
We would have a 2-3 matchup. So we'll see if that's in play after tonight. We'll be back tomorrow, though. Break it all down. Get your Athletic subscription. Go to theathletic.com/nodunks so they know we sent you. Get your No Dunks merch over at nodunks.com and keep sending in your questions. nodunks@theathletic.com. Thanks to the stream team for joining us and chiming in there throughout the show. We love it. Clipper Bros.
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Thanks for joining us, and remember, it's the second consecutive season where the first round in the Eastern Conference, all the series ended in 5 games or less.
Brace the day, people. You could stay, every day, and I'd be happy every minute.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.